May it please the court. I'm here representing Vicki Gilmore, who was a defendant in a charge out of St. Clair County, Missouri, where a jury found her guilty of possession of a controlled substance, to wit, methamphetamine. The standard of review here today is for you all to determine whether the evidence that was presented was sufficient for supporting a conviction, and whether or not the judgment of acquittal that was overruled by the court should have been granted. In order for someone to be found guilty of possession, they have to actually have physical possession of it or constructive possession. The facts of this case are that Ms. Gilmore was visiting what was basically her boyfriend. I'm not sure that there's really evidence of it being her boyfriend, but she was at a residence with Josh Foley. That residence was rented by Josh Foley and Ashley Mitchell, who was the mother of Mr. Foley's child. There is one occasion that Deputy Alec Lawson, who was doing trash pulls in the Appleton City area in St. Clair County, there was one occasion that he saw her there at 2:30 in the morning during the month of September of 2014. This case arose as of a search that was conducted on October 1st of 2014. The evidence that was presented at court was that she was inside the residence with another unnamed and unknown individual, don't know whether it was male or female, as well as with Josh Foley. When officers arrived and knocked on the door or came to the residence, Josh Foley exited the back of the residence, took off running, and had dropped or discarded a methamphetamine pipe. Ms. Gilmore stayed inside the residence, and when officers came and asked her to exit the residence, she, along with the other individual, exited the residence, stayed on the porch. She was then talked to by Detective Schumacher, who was part of the Missouri Drug Task Force. She asked if she could leave, and Detective Schumacher said, "No, you can't leave unless you leave your belongings behind," which included like a purse or a bag that was found inside the residence in the hallway. She consented to search of her person, of her bag, of her vehicle, and she was allowed them to look through her cell phone. The evidence that was presented about her knowledge of drugs at all dealt solely with marijuana. The marijuana dealt with a text message that said something about a 20 bag. And the officer indicated that in his knowledge and his experience as an officer, that indicated that it was for a $20 bag of marijuana. My client admitted that she had assisted Mr. Foley in selling marijuana, and also that her and Mr. Foley had smoked all of the marijuana the night before and there was none left. She also admitted that there was paraphernalia inside the residence. Now, in order for her to be guilty of possession of methamphetamine, we know that she did not have actual possession. There has to be constructive possession.
How do we know that?
Because the law states that if it's not within easy access or reach or not found upon your person, then it is not actual possession.
Does that have to be at the time she's arrested, or could the jury have concluded that at some prior time she was in actual possession of it?
I think in order, there has to be evidence of her actual possession, for which there is none. There could be evidence that she was in the residence. Now, this court in State versus Adriano Clark, out of the Southern District transfer, found that basically Mr. Clark, who was sitting on a bed, his shoes or a pair of men's shoes at the foot of the bed or next to him, with a cell phone by a nightstand which contained two opaque pouches, so not see-through, not in plain view, which contained methamphetamine, that his mere presence in the room was not sufficient to prove knowledge and or intent to exercise dominion and control. For constructive possession, you have to not only have knowledge of its existence, but you must also have the intent to exercise dominion and control over that substance.
And in Clark, there was no evidence that the cell phone was his cell phone.
Correct. The only evidence
and
was...
And here there's no evidence that the eyelash curlers was her eyelash curler.
That is true. In fact, there is no evidence that she ever was inside the bathroom where this very small amount of methamphetamine was tucked inside of a medicine cabinet. The only other evidence was paraphernalia that dealt with methamphetamine. Was a paraphernalia pipe that was down inside of the console of a stereo, like a stereo console that was hidden, was not in plain view. There was also a plastic baggie, but that plastic baggie, there was no evidence that it contained methamphetamine, nor any evidence that she had intent.
But she had admitted there was paraphernalia in the home.
She did, and they found marijuana water bong inside the home. There's no evidence that she said there was methamphetamine paraphernalia, only that there was paraphernalia. You cannot speculate as to what it is that...
But she admitted that there something in that home belonged to her, or that she had knowledge of items that were in the home. Is that fair to say?
She did not admit it belonged to her. She admitted there was paraphernalia.
Fair. So she admitted she had knowledge.
Correct. But knowledge is not enough. It requires not only knowledge, but also requires the intent to exercise dominion and control.
So back to the eyelash curler for a second.
I'm sorry.
Back to the eyelash curler for
yes.
a second. If you're saying that it was not hers, logically, whose would it be? It wouldn't be her boyfriend's.
Well, the residence was rented.
It could be.
It could be the boyfriend's, but the residence was actually rented to another female, Ashley Mitchell.
And how far was that from the medicine cabinet where the methamphetamine was found in the bathroom?
It was found inside the medicine cabinet in the bathroom.
Uh-huh, and this was found outside, the eyelash curler was found outside, and how far away were they?
No, the eyelash curler was found on like the bottom shelf of the medicine cabinet.
Okay,
but there's nothing that indicates the eyelash curler belonged in this guilt.
Okay.
But is it a reasonable inference that a jury could believe that the eyelash curler or items in the medicine cabinet belonged to her?
It was a reasonable inference for a jury to believe that the cell phone next to Mr. Adriano Clark was his also. The problem is, and I think this court stated, it is not an inference that you can speculate or force that inference into in order to determine it. There must be evidence of her knowledge as well as evidence of her intent to exercise dominion and control over the methamphetamine, not over the marijuana bong and not over marijuana, but over the methamphetamine.
In the cabinet, am I remembering correctly that you could not directly see the methamphetamine? The plastic bag was behind some other things.
That is correct. It was tucked in on the, like, I believe it was on the left side. So as the medicine cabinet opens up, there's like a slight edge to it, and it was tucked in on the side here. So they didn't see it when they first opened the medicine cabinet, according to the evidence. This court found, and kind of along these lines, in State versus Barber, this court in 1982 held that there was not enough for a conviction where the defendant and two others were in a bedroom that contained over 1,000 pills that were stacked and separated on the floor because they couldn't show, they showed that he had knowledge. He was sitting right there and that there were pills, that they were all controlled substances, but that he had no intent. They didn't have any evidence of his intent to exercise dominion or control. The state, this court in 2001 in State versus Wayland said that a court may not supply missing evidence or give the state the benefit of unreasonable, speculative, or forced inferences. And that's a case, it's not a drug case, but that's a case where a gentleman was, I think, having some sort of episode. He was acting strange. He shot through the door. One officer was out there saying, "I'm police, I'm coming down the hallway." He shot through the door, hit that officer, and then there were two other officers out there. He was found guilty of assaulting all of them, as far as first-degree assault. And this court said, no, we can't do that because we cannot force an inference that he knew that two others existed. The court then found him guilty, or this court sent it back, I believe, found guilty of a lesser included of recklessness or assault in the second degree because it was reckless to shoot through that door. But they couldn't force the inference of his knowledge. Here, the state is trying to force that she had knowledge of it. This court has had several other cases wherein it held that knowledge itself is not enough. There's a case out of the Eastern District. A gentleman was at his girlfriend's house doing laundry. Police arrived. This is State versus Morris. Police arrived. Asked if there was marijuana, he told them where it was. That showed his knowledge, but it wasn't his residence, and they found a large quantity of marijuana underneath the sink. And the Eastern District said that admitting to the police where it was and that they got everything was not enough to show that he was going to exercise dominion or control. And a lot of this comes because there's no inference of your right to or your desire to exercise dominion and control when you have joint possession of a premises, which we have here. We've got Ashley Mitchell, who rents it, female. We have Josh Foley, who rents it. And then we have Vicki Gilmore, who was present, along with another individual. So at the time that the officers came, there were three individuals there. One fled. This court has also indicated...
Am I correct? There was no other... She didn't keep jewelry there, didn't keep makeup there otherwise, except this question about the curler, didn't keep clothes there. She had a separate residence.
She had a separate residence in Henry County that was testified to, where she lived. She just happened to be there on this particular night. She was there one other night. The respondent's brief indicates that she was there every time. That is a misstated fact. The officer testified on page 160. The officer testified on 159 that the appellant was present on one and only one occasion, that her vehicle, or a vehicle he believed to be hers, was present on the other five times. In addition to that, they say that she was there every time Trent Beebe, who was the landlord, went by. Trent Beebe testified he believed that to be Vicki Gilmore, but he didn't know whether it was in 2013 when he saw her there or 2014. So there's no indication that she was there during this investigatory time. The state has the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and there is no inference here since it's a joint possession case. But evidence may include statements or actions indicating consciousness of guilt, so an admission about knowledge of methamphetamine, which didn't exist, or that she had smoked methamphetamine, which didn't exist. Routine access to the place where the drugs were found. It's in the bathroom. There's no evidence she was ever in there. Commingling of drugs with the defendant's personal belongings, which did not occur. In fact, the officer searched not only her bag, her cell phone, as well as her automobile, and found nothing that would indicate methamphetamine. A large quantity of drugs, or drugs in plain view, neither of which exist. In addition, one of the other factors that the court considered is fleeing or flight upon arrival of officers. And in this case, only one person fled. That was Mr. Foley, the owner and occupant of the residence. Thank you.
May it please the court. Here, the standard of review is key. We look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict, and we accept any reasonable inferences that the jury could make that support that verdict. It's not speculation to determine, under the totality of the circumstances, that Ms. Gilmore knew about and exercised control over the methamphetamine found in the medicine cabinet in the bathroom. First of all, there was evidence that her vehicle was present six times when an officer was pulling trash in the middle of the night.
Is her vehicle evidence that she was there?
It's a reasonable inference that when her vehicle is there in the middle of the night, that she is also at the trailer in the middle of the night, especially considering we have testimony that on one of these occasions, the officer saw her exit the trailer at 2:30 in the morning.
But it isn't also a reasonable inference that perhaps her car was broken down and she had left it parked there.
It's not impossible that that's true, but under the standard of review, we accept the reasonable inferences that support the jury's verdict. And here, they found that she was guilty of possession of the methamphetamine. So I think we can just accept that when her vehicle was there in the middle of the night, Ms. Gilmore was there at the trailer with her boyfriend.
So I assume you're not arguing that every time someone stays at their boyfriend's house and the boyfriend turns out to have drugs, that you're guilty of possession of those drugs. So what distinguishes this case from those?
Sure, absolutely, Your Honor. That's very true. But in this case, you have to look at the totality of the circumstances to determine whether there was that knowledge and control. First of all, this case is distinguishable from many of the other cases in that the drugs were found in the bathroom. This is a trailer with a single bathroom, and it's an absolute reasonable inference to say that she had access and control over that bathroom.
You're making jumps. Well, it was hidden, but even if you assume she knew about it, control is entirely different. And our cases clearly do not assume control from the mere fact that you are aware of the presence of something. And here, something hidden that was a small amount left in a baggie.
I don't know that it was a small amount left in a baggie. I'm not familiar enough with marijuana to tell how much...
Methamphetamine,
I'm sorry. To tell how much, if it was a tiny amount that was a leftover or if it was an adequate amount for use. But regardless, she admitted that there was paraphernalia in the house. She did not specify that it was marijuana paraphernalia. And a reasonable inference is she knew about paraphernalia that was in plain view in the house.
And again, and I know these are all facts, but but opposing counsel has drawn a strong distinction between facts supporting knowledge and facts supporting control, and that's the one he's contesting here. So I'm not clear from this yet how they show control.
Well, we can show control because she admitted that she was selling drugs, although be it marijuana. She admitted that she had smoked all of the marijuana with her boyfriend the night before. There is an ashtray in the kitchen in plain view with a...
Which was never tested, so we don't know what
was
in
it. It was not tested, but there was testimony that was not objected to at trial that the officer, in his experience, believed that there was methamphetamine residue and that drug users would lick the corners of the bags. There was a Ziploc baggie in the trash of the home on the day of this search with the corners cut off.
What's the relevance of her admissions about the marijuana and the paraphernalia to the fact that there was methamphetamine present in the home? That's like saying, you know, I like gin, but then they find vodka bottles. What's the relevance?
Well, the relevance is that we can make a reasonable inference that when someone is using drugs and there's paraphernalia in plain view, that they, it's really just circumstantial evidence that we can look at this in the light most favorable to the verdict and say she knew that there were drugs in the house. She was using drugs in the house. She admitted to using a certain type of drug. We can make the logical jump that she was also...
How can we make that? That's not logical. No case has ever let you jump from you knew someone was using marijuana in the house to you exercise control over methamphetamine in the house. There's no case that supports such a jump.
There are cases that talk about it's a consideration in the totality of the circumstances when there is evidence of other drugs present in the...
And you could convict someone... just methamphetamine because they knew someone had marijuana.
Not just because they knew someone had marijuana.
Or because they smoked marijuana. That's enough.
I think in this case where you have the plain view of the baggies like the ones that the methamphetamine was packaged in, not only in the trash during the trash pulls, but also in the trash pile at the residence while she was there, the fact that she knew and admitted that there was paraphernalia. There was paraphernalia of a methamphetamine pipe in a console. There was paraphernalia of the baggy corner with the residue in the ashtray on the kitchen table. And there was the methamphetamine ultimately found in the bathroom.
So all of that seems to be evidence, again, of knowledge versus control. If it's out and visible, then we reasonably can infer she knew it was there. But what is it, again, what's your argument that is a reasonable inference that she exercised control over?
The reasonable inference that she exercised the domain and control over that methamphetamine is that we can reasonably infer, based on the fact that she was at least staying at this place, based on the evidence that she was, her vehicle was seen there 5 times in the middle of the night. She was viewed coming out of the trailer at 2:30 in the morning. The landlord saw her vehicle there 10 times.
So again, if you state your boyfriend, you're guilty with them, regardless whether you exercise control.
When you take the totality of the circumstances.
Well, what else is there?
She would have had dominion and control over the bathroom, the kitchen, maybe not a bedroom like in the Clark case where his belongings were found in a different bedroom. It's not always that you have access to all of the bedrooms in a house that you stay or live at, but a single bathroom in a house, a kitchen, you would have that control.
The evidence is that would be joint control.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Yes.
So you need something beyond joint control.
You need something beyond just sharing the
joint possession of the property. You need something tying you to this person as opposed to joint. And what is that?
And I think in that situation, we can take the evidence of the eyelash curler. And sure, it might be, it's not impossible that it was the boyfriend's or that it was left from someone else.
So how does that get you beyond reasonable doubt?
Because if the eyelash curler is hers, which we can reasonably infer that it was, because she was the only woman seen at the trailer in all of the times that it was that anyone came by. I believe there's evidence in the record that the unknown person was a male, but I don't have a citation for that. I'm sorry, Your Honors. But with opening the medicine cabinet and having her items in the medicine cabinet, the methamphetamine was right in the medicine cabinet on the second shelf. The eyelash curler was right in the medicine cabinet on the bottom shelf.
Why isn't that contrary to Clark, where we said the fact that the wallet and the cell phone were there next to the bed didn't show they were his? Certainly the police could have done that, but they failed to do so. The same with the shoes, and we couldn't infer they were his from the fact that they happened to be in a room he was in. Why isn't that exactly the same with the eyelash curler?
Well, I think...
Well, when everybody you've just said is the only bathroom, everybody who came in and out of there would have used that.
That's true. And I will point out again that there was never evidence of other females at the trailer, even just visiting.
I'm trying to think of our prior cases that you talk about clothes, mm-hmm. and it's commingled in the clothing.
Right.
Isn't there all generally evidence that it's similar size or that there are papers with the person's name on them, as opposed to if there were female clothes there, do the cases support you assume they're that female, or does there have to be more?
I think in the cases that have been decided by this court before, they haven't been directly on point because they've mostly dealt with bedrooms. And again, bedrooms aren't necessarily under the complete control of everyone who lives in a house, like a single bathroom would be. And so in the case of Clark, he was in a bedroom where there was a cell phone on the table and some men's shoes on the floor. And I believe this court said that we can't say that the cell phone was his because no one ever checked and looked, and there was a bunch of other stuff on the table, and these bags were opaque. None of his stuff was in that bedroom other than the shoes that were right next to him sitting there and some cash in his pocket that could have led us to believe that he possessed this methamphetamine, but wasn't enough.
But that cash wasn't similar to other cases
right.
that found how it, much, you know, that it was...
It was large denominations.
Amount or denominations.
Yes,
or.
Exactly. And then in the Withrow case, there had been 30 people in and out of this east bedroom, I believe, and the methamphetamine was found in a locked closet that there was no evidence that the defendant had.
So go back to the closed cases. When there is some kind of evidence that someone is, that there is something that is would fit your gender, is that enough, or do the cases require something that shows it's actually belongs to that defendant?
I don't know that they go so far to prove that they actually belong to the defendant. I think that still goes back to a reasonable inference. If you're talking about a size 12 shoe and a, you know, 5'0" woman with a size 4 shoe is, you know, in the room, that's going to be a tougher inference to draw. But if you're talking about just general women's items and a woman...
But that's the problem, isn't it? We don't have general woman's items. We don't have her clothes there. We don't have a makeup bag on the counter and an eyelash curler in the medicine cabinet. We just have an eyelash curler, which could have been there for 20 years. It could have been there, could have been hers, could have belonged to anybody, you know, who came to visit. We don't have... There's nothing else that indicates she treated it like her room or like her home because she didn't leave whether she was there sometimes at night or not. She had no clothes there. She had nothing there to suggest she was taking control of any part of it.
The officer testified that he did not check for clothes, not that there were no clothes there. He couldn't testify whether there were male clothes, female clothes, any kinds of other personal items in the home outside of what was in this medicine cabinet. So the reasonable inference can still be drawn that even if she wasn't there 24/7 and brought all of her clothes to this place, that she was still staying there on a regular basis. And the landlord testified that he met Vicki Gilmore at the home when he was looking for rent, and she was purportedly the only person there at that time, which is another indicator that she had control over this trailer, at least to the common areas, which would include the bathroom. And when you put all of these circumstances together for the totality, the jury could reasonably reach the conclusion that she had control over the methamphetamine that was found in that medicine cabinet. Her purse was also found in the trailer, and you take the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict. So we don't even have to take into consideration the fact that there was evidence that she had her own home, that she lived at this other place. We can make the reasonable inference that she was staying at this trailer a very often amount of time. The landlord said that he saw her car there 10 times and the police officer saw it there 6 times within a reasonable amount of time before this search. Are there any other questions? Okay, in that case, the state asks that you affirm the conviction. Thank you.
I do want to talk about a case that was brought up because I attended on it myself. It's State versus Withrow. And yes, items of methamphetamine production were actually in a locked closet in a bedroom that the defendant, Mr. Withrow, was exiting from. But in that particular case, there was also more. There was paraphernalia throughout the bedroom. There was also chemical odor in that room that would indicate that. Officers had actually seen that man come and go from the residence during its time of surveillance, and he had been there at least twice in the past 2 days. But this court said the defendant's presence alone was not enough to convict him or to connect him to the manufacturing or to even constructive possession of those. There was mail found there addressed to him in this home. However, it had an address of somewhere else. But it was further indication that he was bringing mail there. Maybe it was forwarded. Don't know. The Western District in State versus Bacon, it's a case where there was marijuana, defendant's presence, defendant had marijuana in the bedroom, his personal belongings were in the closet with access to an attic, and that was sufficient for constructive possession of a large quantity of marijuana that was located up above in the attic space. But there was also some cocaine that was found on the floor, like in the kitchen area, and it was a small, I think they said, pebble size of like an aquarium pebble. And the court in the Western District indicated that, look, there was enough for possession of marijuana, but we can't put that cocaine because it was such a small amount. State versus Tomes, the Eastern District, basically there was a manicure case, but it wasn't defined whether it was a female's or whether it was a male's. And in that manicure case, it was in the defendant's bedroom, but there was also two other people there. There was no evidence of the female's personal belongings, and that's who they had charged. No evidence that the case was male or female. She cooperated with law enforcement, just like Ms. Gilmore did here, and that there was marijuana that was found throughout this house. But the marijuana found throughout did not support possession of methamphetamine. And the state here is wanting you to say, because there's so much inferences of knowledge, no admissions, but because we can infer knowledge because she had stated there was paraphernalia and because she had been in there and because her vehicle had been there, that gave her knowledge. But what the state can't tell you and what the state failed to prove at trial is that she intended or that she actually exercised dominion or control over methamphetamine. And that is one of the elements that must be proven. And the state's failure to do that, I think, should cause a reversal of the conviction, and Ms. Gilmore should be set free.
The evidence in other cases have been you can make those reasonable inferences if the drugs are commingled with the defendant's possession.
I would agree with that. The problem that you have here is we don't know whose eyelash curler it was. We don't know that Ms. Gilmore had ever even been inside of that bathroom. We can all infer she had been there, but you can't force speculation, as this court has said many times, an inference of possession.
But there's only one bathroom in the trailer. It's logical she was probably in there.
It's logical.
I think that's a reasonable inference.
It is a reasonable inference, but it's not a reasonable inference that she possessed what was
in there. Or that she used the medicine cabinet, or that she kept one single item of her personal property, and it was an eyelash curler and happened to be in there.
I agree. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.